We'll just get right into it. So this is Con. He is a member of Socialist Alternative, has been for a number of years, and is a student activist at La Trobe University. So give it up for Con.
Right. Well, the Bolshevik Party will be forever memorialised for the events of 1917, their leadership of the October Revolution and their subsequent attempt to construct the world's first socialist state brought the party to the attention of the exploited and the oppressed throughout the world at the time, and have made understanding the party, its ideas, forms of organisation and intervention into the class struggle a focal point of the left for the past 100 years. Now, tied to all of this is the fact that the Bolshevik Party itself underwent an enormous transformation throughout its history, beginning as a handful of Marxist revolutionaries amongst Russia's dissident intellectual milieus. By 1917, the party had become an organisation of tens of thousands of working-class militants with a support base spanning the entirety of Russia. So this talk is going to cover the party's history from the early work of a few individuals in establishing a Marxist current in the Russian left to the party's intervention into the revolutionary upsurge of 1917 and its development into the dominant force of the Russian working class movement. Now, first and foremost, I'm going to focus on the early years of the party. Of central consideration will be the debates that shaped the politics of the Russian left in the 1890s and the 1900s. It was during this period that the Bolsheviks developed an organisational approach to working class struggle that was distinct from even most of the self-identified Marxist group around the world. And it was this approach, really, which enabled them to enormously build their organisation during the revolutionary crises of 1905 and 1917, while simultaneously attempting to develop those crises into working class seizures of power. Now, these periods of revolution will also be analysed a little bit, but they won't be the focus of the talk, as there are obviously a number of other talks at this conference that focus especially on 1917. I'll also delve a bit into the periods of counter-revolution and reaction that began in 1907 and 1914. It was these periods that created not only conditions of extreme repression for the party and the Russian left more broadly, but also intense confusion and ideological disorientation, which had the potential to be even more damaging. 1914 especially brought to the fore the gulf between Bolshevik theory and practice and that of the Second International parties across Europe, most notably the German SPD, which until that point the Bolshevik had held up as really the preeminent model of socialist organisation. On top of this, and related to this, there's a whole history of struggle subsequent to 1917 that is integral to the Bolshevik legacy. First and foremost, this was the attempt to build an international revolutionary movement in the wake of the SPD sellout of working class internationalism. Now, I'm not going to have time to go through a lot of that in this talk, but I think it's important to highlight the significance of that latter struggle in terms of the Bolsheviks' earlier political work in forging a distinct Marxist interventionist current in Russia. The fact that the Bolsheviks had forged themselves as this distinct political current through their refusal to capitulate to the passive determinist politics of much of Russian socialism, and through their constant orientation to working class agency and their conception of the party's role in enabling them to fulfill that agency their conception of the party's role as enabling working class agency to fulfill its historic aims. All of this work was central to the kind of early political arguments in Russian socialism, and so bears on the much more kind of historic latter periods, which I won't have a lot of time to go into. So to start with the very beginnings. In the late 1800s, numerous political groupings emerged in Russia with the aim of overthrowing the Tsarist aristocracy. The rise of a socialist movement throughout Europe meant that by and large these groups identified themselves as some form or another of socialists. So what that word meant and their conceptions of how socialism could be brought about could be wildly divergent. Now, the dominant trend within these groupings became identified as populism. Now, the kind of key common political factor of the populace was that they looked to the peasantry as the crucial agent of social change. Now, this position in the first place was driven by the real absence in Russia at this point in time of a working class in the kind of mid to getting into the late 1800s, and was backed up through theoretical debates about the development of Russian capitalism in the 1870s. In these debates, the populace argued that the weakness of Russian capitalism and the formative level of industry meant that the country would not necessarily undergo a capitalist stage of development. They argued, as a consequence of this, that it would instead be through the organisation of egalitarian peasant communes in the countryside that socialism could be achieved. Now, the key group that kind of prosecuted these political ideas was known as the Narodniks. Now, the Narodniks were largely urban students who would travel to the countryside by themselves and agitate for revolution amongst the peasantry. Now, by and large, they failed horrendously in this agitation. The peasants overwhelmingly viewed the students quite suspiciously. The more conservative of the peasants would often beat the students up for daring to insult the Tsar. And even when they didn't, the Narodniks were often subject to quite extreme and severe state repression. So in the year 1874 alone, for instance, over 4,000 of them were arrested by the Tsar's secret police. Now, in the face of these quite serious setbacks, the Narodniks forsook the peasants, by and large, as an agent of social change, and instead tried to bring about the revolution purely through their own efforts. A lot of them turned to terrorism, and in 1881, a number of them successfully assassinated the Tsar. Now, these attacks were not without public support. For instance, Vera Zasulich, who was a St. Petersburg Narodnik, was acquitted by a sympathetic jury for shooting the chief of police. And even though she had shot the chief of police, she was widely supported in doing so. Nonetheless, these tactics made virtually no headway in bringing down the Tsarist regime, and the Narodniks continued to be subject to extreme repression. Now, throughout their own history, the Bolsheviks constantly paid tribute to the Narodniks. The Bolshevik leader, Zinoviev, likened them to the French revolutionaries of 1879, who, although they were not class allies of the proletariat, set excellent examples for revolutionaries in terms of their courage, self-sacrifice, and determination. The early Marxist movement, however, was developed overwhelmingly through arguments against Narodnik politics and strategies, and through a desire to end their domination of radical Russian politics. Now, the central figure in terms of prosecuting these arguments was a fellow called Georgi Plekhanov. Now, Plekhanov himself had started out as a populist and within the Narodniks. He joined the movement in 1875 as an engineering student, and very quickly he threw himself into the deep end. He organised illegal demonstrations, he supported the group's turn to terrorism, he carried brass knuckles around with himself, and slept with a dagger underneath his pillow. Soon after joining the movement, however, he began to agitate quite seriously and quite politically amongst Russia's growing class of factory workers. And this was not by chance. At this point in time, the industrial working class, though very small in Russia in the 1870s, was beginning to grow in certain pockets of industry. And by the end of the decade, quite explosive pockets of resistance were emerging within a number of the factories. Plekhanov immediately oriented to these struggles. He set up strike funds, wrote leaflets for the workers, distributed them and other forms of propaganda and agitation amongst the factory. Now, this was important, not just in terms of providing assistance to the strike movement, but was very politically educative for Plekhanov and for those around him. They quickly learned that the factory workers were much, much more susceptible and receptive to revolutionary ideas than the peasants had been. And they were very quickly able to organise even small groups of workers, activists, who adhered to socialist ideas and wanted to be involved in a political movement on a much more serious organisational basis. In the early years, though, these developments were quite seriously stunted by repression. The small organisations built in the 1870s quickly broke down after being targeted by the secret police, and Plekhanov was forced to flee the country. Abroad then, and in exile, he began a serious theoretical study of Russian society. Now, as I said, in practice, Plekhanov had already begun to distinguish himself from the dominant currents in the populist movement to his emphasis on agitation, mass action, and factory workers rather than terrorism. He now, much more seriously, began to interrogate the claims that the peasants formed the class basis of socialism and that the development of capitalism was irrelevant to Russia. Through his theoretical work, he began to discern that far from being a haven of egalitarianism, the Russian peasantry was increasingly becoming shaped by the development of capitalism itself. Market competition was leading to rising inequality amongst the peasants, and the peasant villages, which had long been kind of idealized as the units of forthcoming egalitarian socialist communes, were instead increasingly becoming fraught with class divisions. Now, along with these changes in the countryside, it was during this period that the industrial working class really did begin to arise as a mass force within Russian society. So in the late 1870s, a strike wave broke out, dominated by textile workers who were, till that point in time, the major section of factory workers in Russia. Subsequent to that, though, from 1883 to 1900, the Tsarist Empire drove massive industrialization in response to the rising imperial tensions growing across Europe. And this industrialization led to the creation of massive factories for munitions, metalworks, other forms of metalworks. And these factories themselves were run by tens of thousands of highly concentrated workers, substantial numbers of whom were highly skilled and quite literate. Now, these changes in the material conditions and the material structure of Russian society provided the basis for Plekhanov to break with populism. And in 1883, he formed the first Marxist organization in Russia, the Emancipation of Labour Group. Now, he was condemned for doing so. He was accused of dividing the revolutionary groups that already existed and weakening the movement. And he didn't have much to back himself up in doing this. He only had four people in his organisation at the time, two of whom dropped out in the first year of its operations. Nonetheless, Plekhanov's insistence on ideological clarity would prove vital. And it proved vital not just in kind of beginning to combat the populace, but in establishing a distinct political tradition that could be built around. His analysis of Russian society was accompanied with an argument that the populist strategies were fundamentally elitist, based as they were on a belief that a revolution could be carried out on a small core of activists on behalf of the masses, rather than by the masses themselves. Now, in all of this, the theoretical works of Marx and Engels were themselves key. And the early activity of the Emancipation of Labour Group was centred on disseminating key Marxist texts amongst both the radical intellectual milieus and the worker activists themselves. And this theoretical work was really decisive in establishing the credibility of Marxism, as it was only through quite extensive analysis and polemic that the entrenched populist ideas that dominated revolutionary thinking in Russia at the time began to be eroded. Now, the predominance of the Russian peasantry obviously did not become just a historical question at that point in time. They continued to remain the majority of Russian society. And this meant that subsequent substantial political organisations continued to exist which positioned themselves as representatives of the peasantry. While in the wake of the repression that some of these organisations faced, more conservative sections of the Narodniks moved to the right, and some of them eventually formed the core of kind of the bourgeois political organisations within Russia, first and foremost the Cadet Party. But Plekhanov's work through this period meant that a substantial number of the more radical populists did adopt to Marxist politics. And as the working class began to move into struggle in the 1890s, Marxism itself began to arise as a major political force, especially in the Russian cities. All right, so to talk a bit more now about the development of a Marxist revolutionary working class movement in Russia. Now, the creation of an industrial working class in Russia was accompanied quite severely at every step of the way by a massive growth in the forces of repression and containment of the Russian state, especially in St. Petersburg, where the process of industrialization and the growth of the working class was most highly concentrated. From the 1880s, elite army units were stationed in the city, while police numbers exploded and large bureaucracies were created to facilitate spying, surveillance, and organization of the forces of repression. And the state was very, very right to be concerned about the impact that industrialization would have on the dissident revolutionary milieus. The political thirst of the young working class meant that the educational institutions that were created by the state to establish a skilled working class soon became the object of both revolutionary agitation and attempts by the state itself to divide and curtail the workers' ambitions. These schools were at times shut down, but were always reopened as the state's reliance on a skilled workforce continued to grow. Outside of the schools, extreme restrictions were maintained on the press as well as upon other avenues of political debate and discussion. Now, in part, this did lead to a limitation on the development of working class politics up until the 1890s. Lasting political connections were very difficult to be formed, strikes were largely quite defensive, and workers' political consciousness was limited in terms of its development. And reflecting this, I think, as one example, is that during an 1885 textile strike, a petition to the Tsar began with the words, "We address you as children to a father." So at this point in time, the working class is still relatively deferential to power. However, in the early 1890s, a number of political demonstrations and radical study circles arose out of the Tsarist evening Sunday schools, which began to more seriously cohere a layer of radical intellectuals within the working class itself. In this period, you saw the rise of the first citywide working class organisation in St. Petersburg, called the Central Workers' Circle. And this was a study circle ran by a revolutionary called Toklisky. Now, this group quickly learned the need for some form of centralized organization within the Russian revolutionary movement in order to navigate Tsarist repression. And they began to organize political activities in conjunction with the existing dissident milieus. The links between these milieus and radicalizing sections of the working class began to be shown in 1891 when the circle organized the first May Day rally ever to take place in Russia. This rally drew around 200 workers out of the radical intellectual groupings, which is obviously not a huge turnout, but began to demonstrate the kind of connections that were being forged amongst the working class and the revolutionary socialist movement, in part because the rally itself was called in response to a call put out by the First International. Now, these developments towards organisational formation did continue to be disrupted by state repression. So when Lenin joined a circle in 1893, the movement was already infested with police spies and subject to constant arrests. Nonetheless, the schools continued to grow through this period in key working class districts, organising hundreds of workers in weekly discussion groups and through them disseminating radical ideas. Now, I think this point is well worth keeping in mind in general because most depictions of the early Russian Marxist movement really just kind of stressed at the expense of everything else its conspiratorial nature. And there obviously was like a high level of clandestinity in terms of how the movement was organised because of the state repression that I've gone through. The reality, however, is that even before a substantial Marxist organisation was seriously crystallised within Russia, Russian Marxists were already engaged in quite strenuous agitation and debate, which often did find audiences of thousands of workers, even if these weren't coherently organised. Now, in the mid to late 1890s, the level of class struggle really begins to surge within Russia, and it's again concentrated, especially in the textile industry. These were, at this point in time, the most generalised strikes to happen within Russia, at times bringing out virtually the entire textile industry and involving the election of delegates and centralised coordination, a much higher level of politics and organisation than had hitherto existed within the class. Now, they were an extremely important episode in the development of class consciousness and organization amongst a substantial section of the Russian proletariat for those reasons. Now, the state again responded quite seriously to this with both repression and concessions, arresting and exiling leaders while granting economic concessions and offering some workers avenues for individual advancement. As the struggle ebbed, the persecution of working class leaders became intensified, leading to what Tom Freeman called an unprecedented degree of organisational fragmentation and political demoralisation amongst some of the most radical working class leaders. Now, it was in this context that a new trend arose within Russian Marxism known as economism. Now, the economists were shaped both by the mass work that the revolutionaries began to take up during the strike wave, but also crucially by the demoralisation that began to set in as it was crushed. They were called economists because of their arguments that the working class should just confine itself to economic demands. But what this argument reflected on a deep level was that by and large there were a section of the revolutionary milieu that had forsaken the idea that the working class should itself lead the Russian Revolution, and that the party should intervene in order to raise the political consciousness of the class in order to prepare it for such leadership. Instead, political questions and the confrontation with the Tsarist state were to be left in the eyes of the economists entirely to the bourgeoisie, while workers were limited to campaigning only for improvements within the workplace. Now, this argument was first put coherently by the economists, but it would really demonstrate itself to be the crucial argument within Russian socialism right up until the October Revolution in 1917. So in the words of Zinoviev writing in the early 1920s, this was one and the same nucleus, from legal Marxism via economism to Menshevism, and then to liquidationism, and finally to what we have today with the Mensheviks having openly crossed over to the camp of the bourgeoisie. This was one logical chain. Everything could be reduced to the role of the proletariat in the revolution and to the hegemony of the proletariat. So it was during this period then that Lenin, first and foremost, as the preeminent theoretical leader of the Bolsheviks, undertook major and at times quite notorious polemics on the role of the party and the need for working class leadership in the coming Russian Revolution. He quite ruthlessly attacked the economists, first of all, for their lack of clarity, but most importantly, for their conception of the class struggle as merely a means by which workers could improve their economic lot under capitalism, and not as the key means of leading a social transformation of society. Now, the text that Lenin produced, first what is to be done, but then taken up in further arguments with the Mensheviks in one step forward, two steps back, and two tactics of social democracy in the democratic revolution, really marked an enormous theoretical advance in Russian Marxism. Until the early 1900s, Lenin himself had been largely concerned with immediate questions of working class organisation, and his main theoretical work had been continuing to debunk the populist arguments about the peasantry with studies of the material development of Russian society. He has turned now against those within the Marxist movement who argued against the revolutionary capacity of the working class and the development of a party, of a conception of the party, as the fighting interventionist force that would develop that capacity, was virtually unique in the Marxist movement internationally during this period. And these arguments were really vital for cohering a hard revolutionary organisation in Russia and for beginning to undercut the determinist sensibilities that characterised even the most radical figures in the socialist movement, not just in Russia, but abroad. And this was shown by the fact that even revolutionaries of the stature of Leon Trotsky and Rosa Luxemburg objected quite strenuously to Lenin's arguments about the party at this point in time. Now, key to Lenin's arguments making headway, though, through this period, was the rise for the first time of a truly revolutionary wave of struggle on the part of the working class in 1905, and the kind of the way that the 1905 revolution demonstrated the role that different classes would play in any social upheavals in Russian society. So, in January of 1905, the Tsar massacred a workers' demonstration, setting off a revolutionary crisis which would rack the country for the rest of the year. Now, after numerous revolts and setbacks, this crisis would achieve its peak from October to December of 1905, with the creation, for the very first time in world history, of serious institutions of working class power, most importantly the St. Petersburg Soviet. The Soviet drew in thousands of committed working class activists, and through the Bolsheviks and the other revolutionary party's agitations within it, brought Russia to the cusp of an insurrection which could have brought down the Tsar. Now, during this period of crisis and revolution, Lenin's distinct arguments about the need for working class leadership in Russian social upheavals were borne out. The industrial bourgeoisie, initially sympathetic to the movement, quickly became terrified as their workers began independently organizing, and the bourgeoisie quickly defected from any support for the revolution, instead going over to the side of the Tsar and supporting reaction. The workers, on the other hand, throughout the year, demonstrated a really extraordinary capacity for revolutionary boldness and self-organization, and could likely have led a revolution then and there had it not been for the resilience of the army and the passivity of the peasantry. Now, 2 years before the 1905 revolution broke out, the Russian socialist movement had their second all-national congress. Now, this congress had been organized to finalize the creation of a national Russian socialist organization, which had earlier been proclaimed in 1898. The Congress instead resulted in a lasting split within the socialist ranks and the creation of the Bolshevik and Menshevik factions within the Russian Social Democratic Labour Party. Now, though this division initially centred on questions of party membership and membership specifically of the editorial board of Iskra, the party newspaper, deeper political questions would soon come to the fore. Again, most centrally, the role of the working class in the coming Russian Revolution. Now, disputes centred on these questions played out quite messily in the ensuing years. So in the wake of the 1905 revolution, the Mensheviks at times became much more divergent from the Bolsheviks through seeking closer collaboration with bourgeois liberals. For instance, they split from the Socialist Petersburg Committee in 1907 in order to work with the cadets in elections. Yet alongside of this, for substantial periods of time, especially during the major upheavals of the revolution itself, especially when the Menshevik faction was led by left-wingers like Trotsky and Pavu, the faction had ostensibly supported working-class insurrection and concentrated its activities on the Soviet. And so during those periods, you had greater convergence between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. So in part, because of these ambiguities, the two factions would not finalise their formal split into separate parties until 1912. Added to this, the years after 1905 and after 1907 especially were ones of serious demoralisation, exile and confusion for much of the Russian revolutionary left. In the wake of the revolution's defeat, the Tsar unleashed savage repression, and many struggled to come to grips with the fact that the potential for revolution had, at least for a period, faded. Many of the experienced revolutionaries abandoned the movement. For those who remained, the experience of revolution was an argument for them to abstain from all but the most radical forms of activity. Currents within Bolshevism developed, which argued that the party should refuse to engage in the Russian parliament, the trade unions, or virtually any other legal form of organisation. Figures during this period, like Lenin, but also Kamenev, Zinoviev and others, had to spend years taking on these arguments and insisting that the party's task was still to win greater layers of the working class to revolutionary politics, and that this could not be done by ceding ground, even within legal institutions, to the more conservative forces, and leaving a vacuum which their politics could fill. Okay, so I'm going to start to wind up by going through the kind of years of revival after the downturn post-1905 and the road to the Russian Revolution. So in 1912, the working class in Russia again began to move onto the offensive. A massacre of striking miners in the Lida goldfields set off a surge of working class struggle, as well as student protests, which would sustain themselves over the following 2 years. And it was during this period that the Bolsheviks revived and grew quite decisively, intervening into not just the working class movement and the student movement, but into elections, broader legislative questions, and basically any political environment that they could discover. By May Day of 1914, over 250,000 Russian workers were striking in St. Petersburg, while a strike called by the Bolsheviks but themselves in July brought out almost another 150,000 workers, and barricades were erected in the streets of St. Petersburg. All of this, however, would suffer a monumental setback merely a month later when World War I began. The Bolsheviks were forced to confront an enormous wave of repression and a shift to the right throughout the society as kind of pro-war hysteria and nationalism took over, all of which was exacerbated by the betrayal of the working class movement internationally by the parties of the Second International. So in the subsequent period, while beginning to fight for a break from the Second International and a revival of revolutionary internationalist working class politics, the Bolsheviks simultaneously recognised that the war itself would quickly set about a social crisis which would bring into being a new epoch of revolution throughout Europe. By 1916, this argument began to be brought out. You had the disintegration of the Russian war effort, the revival of the working class movement in a number of countries, and the kind of most immediate demonstration of this was the Easter Uprising in Ireland, demonstrating that resistance was starting to return to the political agenda. Within Russia, this flowed into an enormous crisis in the Tsarist state and an explosion of working class militancy in the beginning of 1917, which split the Russian military, set about huge revolts in the countryside, and entered the Romanov autocracy. Now, the Bolsheviks' intervention into 1917 and throughout this period was really the culmination of the party's development of a distinct revolutionary current in the Russian workers' movement. Bolshevik activists drove the struggle that overthrew the Tsar, and after some debate, the party raised the banner of a national working class movement for state power, expressed in the famous slogan, "All power to the Soviets." In fighting for this, the party had to again contend with those who wished to limit the working class movement to support for a bourgeois state. Equally importantly, at times, the party had to try to rein in the most impatient militants within the party and the class more generally, and prevent them from any premature confrontation which could have resulted in the Soviets being crushed before the mass of workers and soldiers were prepared for revolution. Now, the fact that the party was able to so effectively intervene within such a tumultuous historical context can really only be understood through the work that it had been done within the preceding decades, beginning with the work done by figures like Plekhanov in constructing a Marxist current within the Russian revolutionary milieus and developing a systematic critique of contending revolutionary theories of Russian society. It was only on this firm theoretical basis that a group of Marxists was established who were capable of winning a layer of working class activists to the party, both through propaganda and through effective intervention into the class struggle. Now, the development out of this of the Bolsheviks as an organisation of thousands of working class militants was vital to their subsequent intervention into the 1917 revolution, as I said. Without these militants, the party would have been largely impotent, regardless of the correctness of their ideas or theoretical development. And this was borne out during the same period internationally, where revolutionaries who had not done the early work of seriously and strenuously combating and organising against more conservative currents in the working class movement suffered extreme isolation when the revolutionary crises broke out. This led to them being unable to shape the trajectories of those crises and ultimately to the defeat of a number of revolutionary situations of enormous potential internationally. And so from our point of view, I think this legacy does speak quite clearly to the real importance of building as strong an organisation as possible of the revolutionary left within the pockets of resistance that exist towards capitalism today and ultimately within the working class movement at large. And I'll leave it at that.